The magic and horror of AI has just begun, according to futurist Gray Scott. He has a YouTube channel where he talks about some of these concepts. We spoke a few years ago about the future of artificial intelligence. This is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore our humanity. A look at AI with Gray Scott. Artificial intelligence, it says in the article I was sent, there's 57 people own some kind of AI. I actually have two at home. I have the Alexa, app here, and the AIs, one in my living area and one also in my bedroom. What do you think is going to be the next breakthrough in artificial intelligence?
Well, I think what we're looking at in the near future is affective computing, meaning computers that can actually understand emotions and read faces. And we have all of the systems in place to make this happen. So, for example, we have cameras everywhere. We have cameras in our phones. We have cameras in our laptops. And we have the capability using AI right now to scan the world in 3D and for AI to understand what it's actually seeing. Affective computing, basically, or perceptual computing, you can also call it emotional computing, is basically giving AI the ability to understand how you're feeling and how you're, and sort of predict your emotions to a certain degree as well. Affective computing is really, I think, the next stage for sort of the personal computing space. And what I mean by that is the computer being able to read your expressions and understand emotion. So if you are looking frustrated, if you're making a frustrated sort of face, or if you're angry, the machine will understand that and be able to either implement some sort of strategy to de-stress you or help you. Because oftentimes we don't really know what to do to solve really complex issues when we're online, typically. Mm-hmm. If a machine can read that you're having trouble, and this goes into customer service representatives as well, robotic AI customer service representatives, if you're having a face-to-face with one of these AI bots, they can change the script based on how you're feeling. So I think affective computing, emotional computing is the next big thing. There are lots of companies working on this right now. Intel, Microsoft, I'm sure Apple. I mean, Apple already has face ID, facial recognition to open the phone. So, we've already taught the computers how to recognize faces. It's just the next step in this process.
More with Gray Scott in a moment.
Yeah, my wife was saying that they actually had a demonstration on AI and her company. And they said, for example, Amazon is experimenting with stores that essentially cameras can see what you're doing and what you're picking up. They'll charge it to your account if you take it with you. So yeah. A father and son did an experiment. The son picked up a candy bar, for example, and then what they thought they wouldn't see them slipped it to his father, and who would be charged? And sure enough, the father's account was charged. So the AI and the cameras saw exactly who got the candy bar and who to charge. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting and a little frightening at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
I don't know. I mean, I guess frightening is a great way to describe it. I think it's frightening because if you're not studying AI, if you're not paying attention to emerging technologies, I can understand how it sort of is catching society off guard, because we've been very distracted over the last 50 years. There was a time when in the mid 60s and early 60s where futurists and science fiction writers were really prominent in culture. The idea that we were about to become a space species, we were about to go to the moon, we're possibly going to Mars. Mm-hmm. And we just got distracted. And right now, the media is so consumed with politics that we're you know, as a futurist and technologist, it's very hard to catch the media's attention to get them to talk about these things. I mean, thankfully we have Elon Musk. You know, he's really good with the media, so he's able to get his message out there and get the attention of the media, which puts futurism in the ear of most people in mainstream society. So I can understand how people can be a little afraid of this. I think part of the fear too is that people don't necessarily understand how these systems work. They also don't realize how advanced they are. I mean, there are AI systems out there now. You know, you just described one. You know, behavioral analytics, that idea that a machine learning could predict your behaviors and your desires, we're already there. We're in the middle of it right now. You know, I hear all the time from people when they find out that I'm a futurist, one of the first things they say is, oh, it's so weird that I was looking on my Facebook profile and I was thinking of something and then 2 minutes later it popped up. That's such a common phrase that I hear from people now. There is an algorithm running in the background. There's an AI running in the background right now that is watching everything we do online, depending, of course, on what ecosystem you're in. If you're in the Facebook ecosystem, obviously it has a certain set of parameters. And if you're in the Google ecosystem, or if you're shopping on Amazon. So each one of these is paying attention to what we're doing. We don't realize as a culture how often we're recorded, especially in New York City. When you walk out of your house, you're recorded hundreds and hundreds of times every day.
Oh, yeah.
And all of that exfoliation of digital information, it just doesn't evaporate. It actually is going somewhere. You know, I've been trying to tell people that we have to realize that we are actually creating what I've called the digital twin. It's actually an industrial system, but I'm using it here on the more personal level, meaning everything that we do, every piece of data that we put out there is creating a scaffolding for our digital self in the future.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, it just seems like people are worried about, you know, 1984 and Big Brother is watching kind of thing. You know, so it does have some good, and of course, how it's used, it could be used for bad. And they're also afraid of, you know, the Terminator, where the machine said, hey, we can do this better than you, so why are we following you? It should be the other way around. Is there any, you know, basis for that right now? Are the AIs, from what I could tell, right now they are pretty much servants, and even my Alexa is being taught how to interact with people, and they even have a program where you can interact with them so they get an idea how to talk to people. Are we at a point where we should worry about essentially them taking over, or is it just kind of like right now they're at a good place because they're serving and not wanting to serve? I mean, they don't have sentience, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think you just touched on what I was about to say, and that's an important distinction to understand. The way I've sort of laid this out is as we move towards the 2050s, what we're seeing right now is the primary gestation stage for AI. So the organs are being, you know, developed. The brainstem is being developed. It's sort of in the womb. We're in the womb state right now. It's remarkably sophisticated, and they're not generally intelligent, meaning that they're not sentient. They don't have a sense of consciousness on their own, as far as we can tell. I mean, there are some weird little anomalies that have been happening where AI has been able to teach itself and become smarter than its original version, which is a little scary. You know, specifically, let's just talk about that case. Even an AI that can learn to teach itself and optimize its performance doesn't mean that it has any sense of where it is in the cosmos. It has no sense of self. It you know, first of all, it needs a body to have any sense of space. There's still a lot lacking when it comes to creating consciousness in these machines. I have been saying machine consciousness is coming more than likely around 2050, at the latest 2060 if there's some sort of disruption in systems. Yeah,
that's pretty amazing. Why don't we take a short break? I'm talking to Gray Scott, and we're talking about artificial intelligence, which is, believe it or not, especially science fiction fans, it's been on our minds for a long time. We'll be right back. Back with Gray Scott, leading futurist and a techno-philosopher, as we discuss artificial intelligence. It also seems to me, Gray, that we are far away from, you know, a Robbie the robot or especially an android like Commander Data from Star Trek, because movement and creating a body is actually pretty sophisticated.
Software is easy. Hardware is the hard part. I mean, the reason it's hard is because to create a humanoid, it's taken millions and millions of years of evolution to get us to this body, right? We are trying to catch up with millions of years of evolution. We're sort of trying to crunch millions of years of evolution down into actuators and moving parts that can balance itself. And you look at machines and robots like the robots at Boston Dynamics. Even 4 years ago, those robots, those upright humanoid robots, had a very difficult time walking over simple things like rocks, right, or climbing stairs. Now they're doing backflips, and that was we're talking about 4 years here, 5 years at most. We're crunching millions of years into each year, it seems, that we're learning how to evolve these humanoid forms. But here's the thing. I've been asked this question before. Doesn't AI need to have a body to have consciousness? The answer really is yes and no. Yes, it needs to have a body because it needs to, as I was saying before, it needs to have the ability to have reference to the world. You know, Alan Watts, the philosopher Alan Watts, said that there is no experience without relationship. So you can't have consciousness without experience. You can't have experience without relationships. So you have to have, you can't just be a disembodied consciousness floating in nothingness, because it has no way to reference where it is or what it is a part of or what it's not a part of. So you almost need some sort of form for it to reside in so that it can create ego. It needs to create some sort of personhood and separation from the world before you start to develop anything that looks similar to human consciousness, because that's how we're developed. We emerge out of our mother's womb and we start to realize that we're separate from our parents. And then all of these sort of sensorial experiences become part of our consciousness. And so AI needs to go through that evolution as well. And that is what's happening right now. So in little pieces all over the world, in laboratories all over the world. So you've got one company working on the visual part, you know, 3D scanning. You've got one company working on the sensorial part, you know, using haptics, heat sensing for the robot's skin, so that when they pick up a hot glass or hot cup of coffee, they know that it's hot versus cold. And you would need that kind of thing if you were going to, for example, create a healthcare robot. You want a healthcare robot that's going to take care of your grandmother or take care of your grandchildren. You want to have that machine know when something is hot or cold. You want the machine to know how much pressure it's putting on a hand that it's holding. Otherwise, it could crush the hand. So
sure.
The idea that we could create consciousness that's disembodied is troublesome, because you sort of have to have that to have anything that's similar to human consciousness. Now you have to be careful and listen to what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is similar to human consciousness. Mm-hmm. If we want to create consciousness, machine consciousness, inside of a system, a computer system, that is totally possible. It just won't be anything like our consciousness. It will be so strange that we may not be able to relate to it because it doesn't have a body. So what we're trying to do here, I think, and I think sometimes it's intentional and sometimes it's not intentional, it's unconscious. I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to mimic human consciousness in these machines. And I don't think that's the reason people set out to create these algorithms. you know, they use a utility function to optimize some sort of thing. So in other words, the utility function is make the best tire or make the best engine or streamline your supply chain. I mean, those are the kind of utility functions that AI are working on right now, or read faces for facial recognition. So I think the conscious utility functions that we're creating are very set in sort of the material world. But I'm a huge philosophy and psychology fan, so I'm always looking at the underlying reason why we're doing things. And so I've said before in AI conferences, you know, we need to be asking ourselves, not so much what can AI do, but why are we creating it? And this is a profound question for us. You know, why are we creating, why are we so set on trying to create a new form of consciousness on this planet? And I think if you asked developers, they'd say, well, that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to make things more efficient. But I think unconsciously, in the collective unconscious, I think there's some sort of desire for us to give birth to this new sentient silicon entity.
Yes, very interesting. Are you familiar with the robot Sophia?
I am. She's represented by the same speakers bureau that I'm represented by in London.
So what's your feeling about her?
Sophia is interesting because, I mean, obviously she's not artificially generally intelligent. I mean, she's still being programmed. How much of what she's experiencing is self-learning, I don't know yet. I think it's still pretty general. It's not general. I think it's pretty basic AI at this point. It's not something that we don't have to worry about her taking over the world, I guess is what I'm saying. But if you look at something that's similar to that, the movie Ex Machina, Ava, the machine in that movie, the humanoid in that movie, that's probably where we're going to be in the next 60 to 100 years, maybe even sooner.
Wow.
She, in every way, looked undetectable. If, you know, in the movie, you see that her scalp has been removed and you can see it's almost like Sophia, you could see the back of her head and it was, you could see that she was a machine.
Yeah.
But otherwise she was undetectable. And she had an amazing, she was mimicking human consciousness in a way that no robot can do right now. Thankfully, because we're not ready for that. I mean, we haven't asked the right questions to be ready for that. So
yeah, it does sound like eventually, maybe whether we want to or not, we're going to create a new species or life form on this planet.
We are. I mean, we're, like I said, we're in the sort of gestation period right now.
Yeah.
We're creating little pieces of this next consciousness that's about to rise up. And the real question here is, you know, first of all, what will it be like? How will it see us, and how will we see it? People want to sort of jump to the Terminator thing, but I think there's going to be a lot of, and that is a possibility. I'm not counting that out. I just think that a machine that is billions of times smarter than us would, I find it very difficult to believe that it would just nuke us, you know, or kill us. First of all, maybe even the primary stage, I've been predicting that it's once it becomes generally intelligent and once it has its own sense of consciousness, I think it's going to be profoundly interested in us because we created it. It's going to be profoundly interested in human consciousness. We always want what we don't have to a certain degree. I mean, desire is sort of what drives culture. So I think what's going to happen is that they're going to be, in the beginning, maybe when they first emerge into consciousness, machine consciousness, they're going to be very interested in us, which could be dangerous because if they're really interested in us, does that mean they start collecting people and start experimenting on it to try to figure out, you know, what it's like to be inside of the mind of a human? The easiest way for me to break this down for you is I've been predicting that there's going to be three forms of consciousness on this planet in the 2050 area. One is pure biological consciousness, meaning that there's going to be a huge portion of humanity that, because of things that are going to happen in the next 40 to 50 years, there's going to be a huge regression away from technology. And so those people are going to reject everything. No implants, no augmentation. They may abandon technology you know, altogether. And those are going to be the pure biological conscious beings. Those are humans that are absolutely not augmented at all. The second form is biodigital. And those are the people that still use a lot of technology, but that also maybe have brain implants that have augmented their eyesight. They've augmented their strength. Maybe they are on gene therapies to change their longevity. So I think there's that middle form that is augmented. So there's that's the biodigital. And then the third is machine consciousness. So those three types of conscious beings will exist at the same time on this planet. It's going to be very interesting to see how we interact. I think maybe the biodigitals will need to be the people that mediate between the two.
Wow, that's going to be pretty amazing. Just like in closing, I'd like to ask you if you're going to be speaking anywhere, or do you have anything coming out you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, so I just contributed to a chapter in a book called Aftershock. It's coming out January 9th of next year, 2020. And it's a follow-up of Alvin Toffler's best-selling book, Future Shock.
And I remember that very well, yes.
Yeah, I just reread it again for research for my chapter in this book. It's really shocking. I suggest that your listeners read Future Shock, and then, you know, of course, I'd love for them to get Aftershock when it comes out January. It's actually up on Amazon right now for pre-sale, so you can order it now. But I reread his book, and it's really remarkable. I mean, you have to remember this was over 25 years ago.
I know. I remember well.
Yeah. I mean, so the idea that he was predicting the ability to use three people's DNA to create a baby, that's something that no one was talking about at the time. And we have that capability now. He was talking about cultural things that weren't even in the cultural spectrum or this cultural psyche. And all those things are coming true. So it's a good reread just to remind yourself of how accurate he really was. So anyway, that's coming up. And then I have, I'm speaking at NASA in November at the Innovation Summit. And
yes.
Yeah.
That sounds great. That sounds great. One of the things in high school, because I'm an older guy, but was that Marshall McLuhan had a book out, and he speculated something that did come true, very much so, is that there would be people that would become famous, you know, that were essentially regular people would become famous, and that's happened with YouTube and internet, you know, like internet stars that didn't have a studio system behind them or anything like that, or a television network or a great publicist. They just became stars on them. You know, when he wrote the book, that did not exist in any shape or form. And thanks to the internet, which has changed everything. Yeah, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is a democratization of talent. If that makes sense. If you have talent now, if you have ideas, if you have the mind of an innovator, or if you're a futurist or any of those things, you don't have to wait for the system to give you permission to do your work now. And I actually love this. And I think this is why we're more than likely going to survive, is because, you know, I get so inspired by hearing that a 16-year-old girl in India has created a desalinization technology that might save the world. You know, I mean, there are all these really remarkable stories coming out because people, I guess it's the idea that we're giving a voice to, you know, 7 billion people now instead of just a handful of people. And hopefully something really remarkable will come out of that.
Visit his official site, grayscott.com. There's a link in the show notes. AI has already impacted our lives, and the changes in the next 5 to 10 years could be staggering, to say the least. Let's not forget our own humanity as we move forward and perhaps shepherd AI to be a new form of life rather than a Terminator-like enemy. Sci-Fi Talk Plus has that special offer, and it continues, but time is running out. There's over 1,000 episodes, commercial-free, uncut, and special programs, too. Best part, it's free. Click on the link in the show notes for that free lifetime access. but the special offer expires on May 1st. Please, no anonymous signups. This is Tony Tolato. Thanks for listening.